Translation. The elementary creation of 16 items of matter, namely the five elements, fire, water, land, air and sky, sound, form, taste, smell, touch, and the eyes, ears, nose, tongue, skin and mind, is known as sarga, whereas subsequent resultant interactions of the modes of material nature is called visarga. Purport. In order to explain the 10 divisional symptoms of the Srimad Bhagavatam, there are 7 continuous verses. The first of these under reference pertain to the 16 elementary manifestations of earth, water, etc., with material ego composed of material intelligence and mind. The subsequent creation is a result of the reactions of the above-mentioned 16 energies of the first Purusha. The Mahavishnu incarnation of Govinda has lit... I'll read that again. The subsequent creation is a result of the reactions of the above-mentioned 16 energies of the first Purusha, the Mahavishnu incarnation of Govinda, as later explained by Brahma in his treatise Brahma Samhita 5.47 as follows. Yakaranavajalebhajitismayoga nidram ananta jagadanda samamakshupa adara shakti mavalambya param swamurtim govindamadipurusham tamaham vajami. The first Purusha incarnation of Govinda, Lord Krishna, known as the Mahavishnu, goes into a yoga nidra, mystic sleep, and the innumerable universes are situated in potency in each and every hair all of his transcendental body. As mentioned in the previous verse, Shrutena, or with reference to the Vedic conclusions, the creation is made possible from the Supreme Personality of Godhead directly by manifestations of his particular energies, such as a Vedic reference. The creation appears to be a product of material nature. Without such a Vedic reference, the creation appears to be a product of material nature. This conclusion comes from a poor fund of knowledge. From Vedic reference, it is concluded that the origin of all energies, namely internal, external and marginal, is the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And as explained herein before, the illusory conclusion is that creation is made by the inert material nature. The Vedic conclusion is transcendental light, whereas the non-Vedic conclusion is material darkness. The internal potency of the Supreme Lord is identical with the Supreme Lord, and the external potency is enlivened in contact with the internal potency. The parts and parcels of the internal potency which react in contact with the external potency are called the marginal potency, or the living entities. Thus, the original creation is directly from the Supreme Personality of Godhead, or Parabrahman, and then secondary creation, as a reactionary result of the original ingredients, is made by Brahma. Thus, the activities of the whole universe are started. Omigan timirandasya gyananjana shalakaya chakshurunmilitam jena tasmai shri guruve namaha. Nama Om Vishnu Padaya Krishna Prasaya Bhutale Srimati Bhakti Vedanta Swaminiti Namine Namaste Saraswati Devi Gauravani Pracharine Nirvishesha Shunyavadi Pastatya Deshacharine. So Bhagavatam is the answer to all questions. And so in chapter 8, Shukadeva Goswami was asking so many questions, which a lot of the time was about creation. And so then in the rest of the Srimad Bhagavatam, these questions are answered all the way through, but mostly in the first four cantos. So that's a lot of the Bhagavatam. It's after the 12 cantos. That's, say, if you know, numbers, they're all equal in volume of words. It's a third. And a lot of these explanations, especially in the third canto, about creation. And in the second, in the third canto, about creation. That goes into the fourth to some degree also. And here we are in the second canto, a lot of this is about creation. So it's important to understand that unless we have a reference point, it's difficult to understand anything. You know, if we just start hearing about the pastimes of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, you think, what are you talking about? You know, it'd be like, you know, a comic or something like that, or some fairy tales. And nobody would take it seriously. And so, you know, here we have the example that everything is really thoroughly understood first before we can actually start understanding Krishna. We have to know who we are. What's the first question? Well, Prabhupada was talking to one person, and he wasn't a devotee, it was a conversation. He says, why is there anything? He thought that was the original question, and Prabhupada says, that's wrong. That's the wrong premise. He says, that's not the first question. The first question is, what was it? No. Prabhupada said, where does everything come from? He says, that's the first question. What's the source of everything? You know, because, you know, who am I? We're coming from that source. So Prabhupada corrected him. And so this is why Bhagavatam is going into so much detail. And then in Bhagavad Gita, it mentions in the ninth chapter about the summum bonum of the Bhagavad Gita, which is, you know, devotional service. And it, straight after that, what does it say? Now I will explain to you knowledge more confidential, more important. And then it starts talking about, you know, the opulences of the Absolute. And then it goes into the, you know, in the 11th, it starts talking about the universal form. And this chapter's starting to talk about. So Sukadeva Goswami was asking this question, or Parikshit Maharaj was asking the questions, and Sukadeva Goswami, all the way through the 8th chapter. And then in the beginning of the 9th chapter, he starts by talking about the creation of Brahma first, the first created being, and how he heard Srimad. Well, first of all, he was born on the lotus flower from the navel of which Vishnu was it? Govardhakshaya Vishnu. And so then, you know, he didn't know what to do. He was born into darkness, and so he started, you know, searching around in the dark. And then eventually, after, you know, a long time, it's not that he just, for a few minutes, you know, it was like many, many thousands of years of the demigods. And then eventually, when he was frustrated, then Krishna acted. You know, when we're frustrated in life, that's when we pray to hear. And so then he pronounced these two syllables, tapa. And, you know, Lord Brahma was given the intelligence to understand immediately I should, you know, start to work for a living. Is that right? I have to do something. Get a job. So not that kind of work. He sort of performed tapasya. And by this tapasya, he pleased the Supreme Lord. And then the Lord appeared before him. And he showed him the whole spiritual world. So this is a result of tapasya. We may think that sometimes, you know, when are we going to get some nectar, some bliss, you know? I mean, we've just had some nectar and bliss in kirtan. But, you know, it could be more, right? So this tapasya actually is good. It's good for us. And when we start to get some taste, we appreciate it. As soon as when we perform tapasya, it seems like forever. But then as soon as we get a taste, what happens? It's all forgot immediately. And so this little bit of tapasya we're performing in devotional service is very negligible. As soon as we get a taste, it's forgotten. And so Brahma was like that. You know, in all his tapasya, he was in ecstasy. And then he started asking a question. He asked for the Lord asked him, "Do you want a benediction? I'll give you a benediction." And so that's when he asked the four key questions which Gaudakshai Vishnu answered in the Chatur Shloki. and then, obviously, when he got that information, he gave that to Narad, and then Narad gave it to Vyasadeva. This is in the first canto, fifth chapter. And so then now we start with this verse, with this chapter. And, you know, the first thing it starts with is saga. Now Brahma's, you know, spoke the Chatur Shloki. And so these 10 subjects of the Srimad Bhagavatam are expansions of the Chatur Shloki. It's, you know, we've got the condensed version in 4 seed verses. Now we're expanding it into 10 verses or 10 subjects. And the first 9, if you read them, they're all about this material world. And the last one is about Sumanbonam, is about a shriya taking shelter of the person who is the shelter of the whole creation. So that's why we work through Bhagavatam very methodically, to, you know, understand our position in relation to this world, in relation to everybody else, in relation to the spiritual world. And then, you know, this builds up confidence. And if we have a map, we have confidence, don't we? If we lose our way, you know, if we're driving, we just come to a stop and we pull over until we find out where we're going. So this is the process. We have a roadmap. And Bhagavatam's that roadmap. So we're starting with the beginning. Atrasarga Visarga. Atrasarga. So Sarga is the first creation. The 16 elements, which it's mentioned, they form, you know, the basic principles to actually enjoy this world. The ingredients. But there's no forms. They're there. And so it's the same in anything, you know. The Supreme Lord supplies, and we utilize, and we think we're creating. You know, Prabhupada was saying, like a tree. A tree has fruits, if it's a pious tree, right? So, Prabhupada said, where does the taste in the fruits come from? Where does the citric acid come from? You know, the taste comes from the citric acid or whatever particular chemicals are there, right? And so then Prabhupada says, but, you know, so where that's coming from the life of the tree. You know, there's life in the tree. We can see that by the way the fruits are growing, the way the leaves are growing, the way the bark is. Everything's coming from a life force. So the chemicals are coming from life. So can anybody argue with that? What would the scientists say? What would be the first question? But what would Prabhupada say? Yeah, that's right. They'd said that, and he said, "Look, here's all the chemicals. Make an orange." Like that. So yeah, it's coming from consciousness. And at the end of this particular chapter, it says the light and the darkness, like the sun, it's the source. Where's it coming from? It's the Brahma Jyoti. Where's the Brahma Jyoti coming from? The toe of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, from his bodily effulgence. So the Brahma Jyoti is actually conscious. And so, you know, we get light from the sun. But if we notice, if we have a thing in the dark for too long, it just dies. So the life force is coming from the sun. Prabhupada says if the sun's not there, nothing will live. So this is proof that everything's coming from the sun, just like everything's coming from Krishna, ultimately. So that in the last of the... No, not the last. Yeah, the last of the Chaturshloki, it mentions that, you know, we should search for the absolute truth, both directly and indirectly, right? So these first nine subject matters are indirect, and the last one is direct. In all space and time, both indirectly and directly. Let's have a look. I've got some... What's that? Ashraya. Yeah. Or summum bonum. The absolute truth. Or Ashraya means that which gives shelter. So, you know, that's giving shelter to the whole of the material and spiritual creation. I just wrote some things down here. First is the energy, right? Energy, an energetic source. The energetic source and the energy. So Prabhupada gives the example in Life Comes From Life that it's like a fire. In fire there's heat, right? Is there fire in heat? I have to think about that one. Is the fire in here? Who says yes? Put it up. You know, is it warm in here? Is there some heat? Is there any fire? So, in other words... Yes, so he's saying this is like the God and the Jiva. There's, you know, there's fire, there's energy in the Supreme Lord. He's the energetic source. But without that, we don't have any energy. So without, you know, the fire, we don't have any heat. Right? What's another one? Reflection. I think everybody knows this one. Reflection of knowledge is not really... reflection. In a reflection, everything's different. Everything's the wrong way around. What's knowledge? What's real knowledge? When it's reflected in the material world, it becomes ignorance. This is another one. And last one, which proves that we cannot understand God by our own limited endeavour. I mean, we all have practical experience of that, but theoretically... Prabhupada gives the example of the sun. He says, if the sun went dark, could we actually see the sun? Could we get out our flashlight and, you know? So Prabhupada said, you know, without the sun, nothing can be seen. And actually, without the sun, unless they're charged up, you wouldn't have any power for your, you know, for anything. So the sun is actually self-illuminating. So Krishna is self-illuminating, and he illuminates our hearts when we're actually ready. Just like they say, an acharya can be, is self-effulgent, is it? What does that mean, self-effulgent acharya? Eh? He's completely empowered. Om Purna, Purna, Purnamidam. He's completely empowered to, you know, perform the activity of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. He doesn't need anything else. He's completely in touch with the Supersoul, or Krishna. And therefore he's able to actually... there's an example of that in Shastra. Anybody? It's in the pastime of Bali Maharaj and Prahlad Maharaj, where the, you know, Bali Maharaj is actually sent to Sutala Loka. And then he said that, you know, Lord Vishnu would be his gatekeeper, and he would protect him from the demons. And he said he would have all opulences, even greater than the heavenly planets. And then he said, and then we'll send Prahlad Maharaj. Why did he send Prahlad Maharaj? So he sent Prahlad Maharaj. Why did he send Prahlad Maharaj? Hey? Come on, you've got to work a little bit. Hey? Vishnu was asking?
Vishnu was acting through Prahlad Maharaj. Prahlad Maharaj was in touch with the Supersoul.
Yeah, that's the next. That's the next question. He's in front. So yeah, he sent Prahlad Maharaj to give him association. And I was thinking when I heard that, you know, when I first heard that, who gave Prahlad Maharaj association? And you know, the person I was asking, he was thinking for a while, and he said, he has his own association. And at that point, I can't understand that. But then, you know, when we think about self-effulgence and empowerment and Shakti Avesh, then we can understand that that's the point. If we're so empowered, like Prabhupada, when he went to New York, he was regularly going to the Hudson River to sit on a bench, and this Mr. Rubin, was it? He was coming to sit with him, you know, he was an underground conductor. And he said, you know, Swamiji, you're not having any success, are you? You know, you're in a foreign land, you don't have any money, you don't have any followers. And, you know, why don't you go back home, more or less? And what did Prabhupada say? Oh, he said, I'm so successful. He said, I'm in this rotten city of New York, contaminated city, and I'm still Krishna conscious. He says, when he took his disciples, he was speaking to his disciples, says, I can do this. Me and Bhaktivinoda Kaur can do this, but you can't. So that's self-effulgent. Okay, so, the light, this material world, is life is coming from light. It's coming from the energy of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So in the second verse of the Chaturshloki, it says, Rite artam yat pratyeta, na pratyeta chatmani, tadvidyat atmanomayam, yato bhasa yato tamaha. And it's saying that anything that appears to be of any value in this world, if it isn't in connection with me, has no reality. It's like a reflection of the darkness. So Prabhupada explains that in different ways in the purport. But Prabhupada explained this verse in that purport itself. He said that dovetailing everything with Krishna is yogamaya. That's light. Or reality, yukta vairagya. And seeing everything, anything separate from Krishna is Mahamaya. So this is described as vigyan realization, or sambandha knowledge. Understanding, you know, who we are and where we're going, and also realization of that. So yeah, we're dealing with Sarga up to the middle of this chapter, then we go into Visarga. Visarga means that these elements are useless unless they're actually given, unless they're actually used in a certain way, they're combined in a certain way. So this is Lord Brahma's particular expertise given by Krishna, that he was given the information and ability to create all different species of life within the universe. And this is what the 10th chapter particularly deals with, is the, you know, formation of our senses and our body so that we can actually function in this world. So this is the difference between the Lord's creation, and this is the difference between Lord's creation and Lord Brahma. And it's the same with anything in this world. It's the same principle, that nobody creates anything. We may, you know, manipulate things to get a certain result, but both the result and the intelligence to actually do that are coming from Krishna. So this is actually not a reflection anymore. The scientists, anybody in this world who's thinking like that, they're in the darkness of ignorance. Anybody who's thinking in relationship to Krishna, then they come into the real understanding of activity in this world, a real understanding of any activity, actually. And Bhagavad Gita expands on these things. He says it's a combination of the living entity, the marginal potency, or is actually the paraprakriti with a choice. Krishna's a paraprakriti. We are paraprakriti, our superior energy, but we have a choice. Krishna, he's got all choices, therefore he always stays paraprakriti. And the lower energies are paraprakriti. And so in Bhagavad Gita, this is nicely explained. Does anybody know where? The combination of the para and the apara. What's that? Yeah, that's the apara. That's a paraprakriti. That's the living entity. And what's the apara? Manushyanam. So it says the, you know, then he goes on to what's that one? I can't remember now. What's the verse? He talks about the eight. There are eight elements. Bhumir apanalo vayu. Ahankari itma. Brina prakriti astada. Aparayam itastranyam prakriti vidimepram. Jiva bhuta. Mahabhaya. Yayedam daryate jagat. Jiva bhuta means conditioned soul. So the conditioned soul is manipulating these elements, which is mentioned in the previous verse. So without the interference of the spirit soul, these elements remain inert. And this is the principle of all activity in this material world. I remember I was once on Sankirtan, and I'd probably been in the movement about a couple of weeks, but it was Liverpool actually, and I just got this, I was just looking at the city, and I just got the understanding that everything's dead. The only thing that's actually making anything alive is actually the soul. You know, these people are actually walking about, you know, they're actually dead. And it's just the soul which is actually identifying with that. I couldn't explain why I felt like that, but I just got that realization. So Krishna gave a little bit of mercy, I think. Anyway, there's 5 minutes to go. Yeah, so if you read the 7th chapter of Bhagavad Gita, especially up to text 12, we'll very nicely understand this primary creation and the combination of the living entity. So we can stop there. We've got 5 minutes left. Yeah, just one more thing, actually. In the Bhagavad Gita, in the 13th chapter, it says, I can't remember the Sanskrit, Karana Karana Kartritve Uchite, yeah. So this means that the living entity is the cause of his suffering in this world, but the material energy is the cause of his situation. So, in other words, whatever we're actually desiring, then that eventually becomes manifest. And then the living entity, he tries to enjoy that situation, and by that activity of trying to enjoy that situation, he suffers. So, you know, everything's caused by the desire of the living entity, ultimately. And the process of Krishna consciousness is to change that desire, that's all. If we can change that desire, change that consciousness, then everything actually comes out of the darkness into the light. So first of all, in this part of Bhagavatam, it's explaining the darkness of this material world and our relationship with it. Hare Krishna. So does anybody have any comments or any questions before we finish?
So Maharaj, so there's a group of people, they have some enlightenment, kind of, and they would think that everything is a play, because the whole thing is Krishna's play and his pastimes, and so they don't take the spiritual life too seriously, but they also think it's a play, so they just have fun in this life, and they might get through okay, you know, they might have some realizations or some purity, but they won't commit themselves. But they see the whole thing as a play and a drama. So they go along with it. And they don't take the suffering too seriously. And I'm thinking, what about such people? What happened? Where are they going?
Well, you know, if we read Bhagavatam, they're not going to in of any auspicious direction. In the fifth canto, it explains, you know. And why are they, you know, your first part of your question is, why are they doing that, even though they actually may be able to understand, they may have explained to them. So that's because the heart's contaminated by the modes of nature. And they're bound to act according to that contamination. And the mind's also part of the heart. The mind is going to act in a certain way. And so, you know, it's a process. Devotional service is a process, and before knowledge can be transmitted, there has to be a receiver. If there's not a reception for it, it won't go anywhere. So the heart has to be made receptive. And so the process of Vaidhi Sadhana Bhakti does that. But there's no loss, because actually, by hearing some transcendental knowledge, the actual heart does become a little purified. By taking some prasadam, the heart becomes purified. And by, you know, association of devotees, we get purified. And that purification means we're able to understand, you know, even if we're illiterate, if the heart's purified and we're serious, then Krishna will actually give us the necessary understanding to go forward. So that's our duty, is that even though, you know, it just seems like a dead loss sometimes, you know, that it's not, that they're starting their spiritual life, and at some point we may not see that. You know, we want to see everybody we contact, you know, they come to the temple, you know, we shave them up, you know. This used to be the thing in the 80s, you know, everybody who came to the temple, if they came for 4 or 5 times, you know, they were they started losing their hair, you know. But it don't happen like that now. They come once and then you don't see them again. Maybe what we may see him again, but so we have to keep in touch online somehow, you know, keep out there. But they have got some purification, and at some point, you know, we can actually it can be built upon like that. Shave them and save them.
Hare Krishna Maharaj, thank you for class. This question came to mind when you were talking about Krishna's various energies, and we as jivas are his marginal energies. So my first question was,
like, to speak up a little bit.
So we as jivas are his marginal energies. So the first question was, what energy are Krishna's associates? And I imagine they're of a higher energy. And, like, do we always stay as that marginal energy? Because, like, say if we have a desire to be, like, associating closely with Krishna, like, is it even possible as marginal energy?
Is it possible for us to what?
To associate with Krishna, like, when we go back to Godhead, like, as that marginal energy? Because, like, his eternal associates, like, Nanda and Yashodama, like, they're, I imagine, of a higher energy.
We are that higher energy already. The soul is a paraprakriti, or the superior energy, the same in quality with the Lord's. It's just covered. We're just in ignorance. We've forgotten. So therefore, we're actually acting independently.
So why are we said to be that marginal energy?
Why is what?
Why are we said to be marginal energy then, the jiva?
Why are we said to be? Marginal energy. Because we have a choice. We only, you know, just like Krishna has many choices, he gives us choice. And we can either choose to serve Krishna or to serve his energy. Because everything's Krishna anyway, it's his energy. There's nothing but Krishna, so We have to serve Krishna somehow, so we can either serve him directly as a person or serve within his, you know, some part of his creation in forgetfulness.
You mentioned Yashoda and Nanda, did you? Yeah, so she's asking about the distinction between Krishna's associates, eternal associates, and the marginal energy. They're different categories.
Yeah. Krishna's associates are like us, but they're eternally freed from material bondage. They call Nitya Siddha. But they're just purified, and therefore they're in the natural constitutional position of service. That's what we're made for. It's not something we have to. It's not something we have to obtain. We already have it, but we can't see it. Nitya Siddha Krishna Prema Sajikabanai Sarvanadi Sridhacheti Karya Adai. Pure love for God is eternally in the heart. Of course, in some circles, some of them are actually, there's Vishnu Tattva. And there's jiva tattva. When the jiva tattva, or the soul, or the living entity like us, decides to serve separately, it's called jiva bhuta. He's conditioned by the material energy. So when we're in that condition, it's hard to understand these things. That's why we keep reading Srimad Bhagavatam. And eventually it becomes clearer. And Krishna, you know, starts to reveal more and more, until we come to a stage where we're convinced about the philosophy. We may not understand the whole philosophy, but we're sufficiently convinced that there's nothing can really deter us anymore. And that That determination comes from practicing as well, not just hearing, but when we practice the process of devotional service, we'll see the philosophy in action and we'll see the results, and then it becomes obvious that it's correct.
Hare Krishna.
So that's real knowledge when it's actually realized like that. And at that point, we're beyond reasonable doubt.
I used to be confused about this when I was a younger devotee, but the way to clarify it is quite easy, is that all Krishna's eternal associates, like Nanda, Yashoda, they're all expansions of Swarup Shakti. So they're not technically marginal. They're part of Krishna's eternal Leela and Nitya Siddha, but they're not technically marginal Jiva Shakti. They're different Shakti.
Yeah. Yeah, we can't take their position, but we can serve with them. Nanda Maharaj, Yashoda, they're all, a different category. They're eternally serving Krishna. But we can actually follow in their footsteps in the same mode as them and assist in service to Krishna. And it's still a direct relationship with Krishna as well. Everybody's got that direct relationship with Krishna, and also simultaneously indirect through the spiritual authority, like that. Even now we can experience that sometimes. We can get some realization, which is not coming from anything outside of, it's coming from internally. But the process is to inquire and associate with devotees, take their advice, check with Shastra whether it's correct, and then, also any realization we get, if it corresponds to what we're hearing, we can understand that it's actually proper knowledge. Yeah?
So, I think it's part of the question was, do we always remind marginal knowledge? Even after attaining liberation, we always remind marginal? Do we? Always?
Afraid so.
Yeah, yes, we can fall down anyway.
I mean, the thing is that Krishna's omnipotent, and so he can do anything. So I'm just going to leave it at that. But what Shastra says is that we're eternally a servant in that category.
So interesting concept is like eternally liberated person. That means Krishna created this kind of. This is actually Krishna himself. This concept doesn't go in my head. What means eternally liberated? They're always liberated. They're always almost like Krishna expansions. So this concept of marginal.
Why are they eternally liberated? Yeah, why are they eternally liberated? Eternal liberated means as soon as we become purified, we're considered eternally liberated.
Mm-hmm. Because, oh, it's still marginal anyway.
I'll give you an example, shall I? Like this verse, Yakara Nanava Jale Bhadyatisma Yoga. In the next verse, it says, Yashyaika Nivasita Kala Matava Lambio, Jivanti Loba Vilaja Jagananda Vishnu Mahansahiya Yasha Kala Vishesho. So it's saying that all the great personalities who live for, I think Brahma lives for 311 trillion years, right? It says, like Brahma and Lord Shiva, they're coming from the body of Mahavishnu, ultimately, of Garbhadakshay Vishnu. He says, and they only stay alive as long as one breath of Mahavishnu. So, this sojourn in this material world is so infinitesimally small. You know what I mean? But we just see it's like forever. in comparison. You know, and that's, you know, that's just one breath out of his sleep, and he's sleeping for 12 hours. Is it 12? Or is it 6? Anyway, he's sleeping for at least 6 hours. And, you know, so that's a long time. And that's why this material world, it's called Yoga Nidra. This is why it's called a dream. Because Mahavishnu is, Garbhadakshay Vishnu, Mahavishnu is asleep. And, you know, so this is all happening. This is all his dream. Yeah?
In Bhagavad Gita 4:35, it answers the question, I think that Taruna was raising. We never fall again into this material existence. Having obtained this knowledge from the self-realized soul, you'll never fall again into this material existence. I think it's 4:35. Maybe somebody can probably tell them in better detail, because I can't remember the whole verse, but 4:35 actually answers that. He says you'll never fall again into this material world, having obtained the knowledge from the self-realized soul. And he says, for having this knowledge, you'll see that all living creatures are but part of the Supreme, and they belong to me. Something like that, I think it was. So it's Bhagavad Gita 4:35. It says we won't return. But I remember Prabhupada saying, could we return? He says you'll always retain your minute independence in whatever situation you're in, whether it be, you know, liberated state or whatever. But
yeah, we have that choice, but we never take it. It's just like, you know, if you've got something which is just completely satisfying you all the time, you're not gonna change.
So, but it's 4:35 that is the one that answers that question.
Okay, we'll stop there anyway. Kantaro Srimad Bhagavatam Ki Jai. Shiva Prabhupada Ki Jai.